Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us. We have a very special show lined up for you. We have interviews with Phillies players. We're going to talk Washington Nationals baseball, and we have some high school spring sports features. And in studio, we have some very special guests. One of, if not the big story over the winter. That story and those special guests will be coming up in just a minute. But first, everything starts with the introduction of the co-host of the program, senior sports writer to The Morning Call, and the king of all Lehigh Valley media, Mr. Keith Edward Groeler. Keith, I heard you had some trouble getting here on time today.
Now, I made it on time today.
No, I heard you fell down a flight of stairs and you had some trouble, back problems.
No, that's our Masters potential champion.
Wasn't that start to the Masters?
I can relate to that. And I can also relate to that golfer who had moved the ball by an inch or like a smidge of an inch.
That wasn't right.
That wasn't right. I agree. No, but no, I forgot. I didn't tell my wife I should have wore blue tonight. Blue Eagle Country. Andy Weaver, I apologize. She presses the shirt, picks out the tie. And I forgot to tell her.
You can't dress yourself?
No, I don't. I can't. Are you kidding me? No. But anyway, I was looking forward to this one because this is one of the great programs in Lehigh Valley sports every year, but certainly this year. Yeah. And to have Andy Weaver's favorite team here is a big thrill.
All right, let's introduce our special in-studio guest, the state champion Nazareth Blue Eagles wrestling team, headed up by head coach of the year, by the way, Dave Kroll. We have Brock Wilson and Travis Stefanik joining us here at the main desk. And we have more members of the state champion wrestling program joining us on our auxiliary set. We hope to get some comments from them and have them chime in throughout the program as well. But first of all, Dave and your entire team, congratulations on an extraordinary year. Usually, you know, you beat Becca, you win a state championship, you win as many individual medals. There's an easy place to start, but you have so many accomplishments this year. And I want to start kind of in a different direction because there was an article in the Morning Call a few weeks ago by Tom Hausnick, the wrestling guru for the Morning Call. And it was a great story talking about this team was as close as you could get to a family. And there was a very special bond formed years ago, even before this year took place. So let's start there. Talk about the relationship you had with this year's team and why was this year's group of players a little unique from any other team you've had after having a lot of great teams over the years.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And we had kind of talked earlier a little bit about coaching. It's a funny, probably from people on the outside would say, oh, your most successful years must be the most fun. That's not always the case. Matter of fact, it probably is more often not the case. There seems to be more drama, more difficulties when the more your success goes up. This team was the exact opposite. It was a true pleasure to coach. The kids just get along so well. They care about each other, and you know when you can have anything when we're part of something bigger than yourself. And you can care about that more than yourself, and everybody's thinking along that same line. That's just the perfect chemistry to have things really go. And then it was kind of the topping on the whole thing was the fact that we were successful. And we knew we were going to have a good team, but it did finish out better than what I would have expected. So it was kind of the perfect combination of a lot of very good things.
Yeah. Travis, that same article. Dave said that you were going to be a state champion when you were in third grade. What was your reaction when you first heard that? And did you remember that years later when you were going after that gold medal?
Right after I ran off the mat after winning my match in the finals, I told Coach that in third grade I was coming into midget practice, and he was walking out, and it was Coach Kroll. Everyone went to talk to Coach Kroll. I was getting jitters, and he's like, you're going to be a state champion one day. And I've kept that in my mind the whole time and just followed the process that he's set for the team and for me. And he came through. He has the best program in the country. He gets us ready for the end of the year. So, yep.
Dave, you remember telling him that until he reminded you?
Absolutely not. I don't. And he came off, and he did right when he came off the mat. He had barely 10 feet off the edge of the res light, and he was telling me that. And I did not. But if I told him, he must have been pretty special to see him. And it's just something about Travis. He's just kind of got that it factor. You know, he's got personality. He's a tremendous leader on the team. And you could, some of those things you can see, leadership abilities and things, even when they're very young and talent-wise.
Well, Travis is one of the few guys I recognize because I've interviewed him after football games, and Travis is a phenomenal quarterback that I believe could play maybe Division II football at quarterback. And I'll ask you about him. I mean, you know, you lose him because football is a tremendous commitment, so he's not really part of the deal there, maybe when you do some summer and fall stuff. But he I guess he always shares of himself and gives of himself to make it work on both teams, which is not easy to do in this day and age.
Yeah, in our sports culture today, it's the trend is to specialize in one sport. I don't personally believe that that's the best thing to do. I was a multi-sport athlete. I think he's very, very good evidence that you can still be a multi-sport athlete. Sometimes you see guys that just focus on one thing. They're almost, I use this analogy, they're almost like a... you know, you're buying a 2016 car, you know, it's a used car. You think, oh, that's a new car. But you look on, it's got 200,000 miles on it. You're not getting such a new car. You know, they're worn down. And that's what actually college coaches are seeing, that kids are, they're coming in, they're young, but their bodies are not young. You know, they've taken a lot of beatings. And so Travis has done that. He's been able to excel in two sports for sure. And I mean, that's become more and more rare, and I kind of wish it wasn't. To this day, I've still never told anybody not to play another sport. I think it's a really good thing to do.
At a school like Nazareth, it's almost a necessity because you just don't. I mean, I know your 6A classification, and when there are six classes, right. And you've been 4A and that kind of stuff in the past, and 3A, but it's not that big of a school. It really isn't. Compared to a Parkland, compared to an Easton, compared to a Liberty. So you need that sharing of athletes. And it takes a good coaching staff and good people like you with the kids in mind to want to share athletes, because there's been a lot of friction over the years between basketball coaches and football coaches and so forth.
Yeah, there is. And once again, I just think I think we have a good relationship and, with the other coaches. And I'm very glad to share mine, and I'm hoping they are glad to share theirs.
Now, Brock, we did a wrestling show in mid-January, and Jim Best, the RCN wrestling analyst, was on the show and referred to you as the quiet Nazareth wrestler. So what do you think about that adjective or that label? Do you agree with it? And then we might ask some of your teammates if they concur with that. So why are you known as, in some circles anyway, as the quiet Nazareth wrestler?
I guess that depends on the day. But you got to ask other people that question.
Travis or your teammates here, what do you agree with? Is Brock the quiet wrestler?
I think he puts on a different perception in front of people he doesn't really, not comfortable around, but he doesn't really know as much.
Yeah. But kind of like movie star.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the way I know him, I don't know him like that. I know him as just a great friend. We hang out all the time. We normally room together when we're going to tournaments, so I know a different side of Brock.
So Brock, I mean, you have Travis, you have Sammy, you have some great wrestlers too, but obviously you've accomplished a lot during your career. So what's it been like to be part of this unit?
This team is great. Like, these are my brothers, this is my family. I've grown up with them. Like, I remember just like being so close with this team, like my whole life. And something Coach Cole told me that kind of stuck with me was after we all got together and went to the JV tournament to watch and like help coach, Coach Cole said that another coach came up to him and said, did you make your kids come here? Or, like, and because he was so surprised to see the varsity kids at the JV tournament.
Yeah.
And Coach Cole was like, no, they all came here on their own. And when he told us that, I was like, that wasn't even like a question to us. Like, we want to be there for our team, whether on JV or varsity. Yeah. Like, they're part of the team.
It's great you have those stories of camaraderie, too. Yeah. Our first email, surprisingly enough, is Andy Weaver.
It's our boy.
Before we go to our break here, I got to get Andy's email. Question for Coach Kroll. Who ate the most after you won the state medal? Who ate the most out in Hershey?
Oh, good question, Andy. Well, it wasn't me. I'll tell you, I go there and I'm just like fried. It would be, I sit in a chair, I'm like comatose, you know, like it's just like this big, bleh, you know, and we did well, you know, and it's kind of sometimes when you accomplish it and you can just sit back and you're kind of drained. I guarantee it was a wrestler that, because some of them had been pretty good weight cut. You know, maybe Andrew Siniglia, he would have been probably out there. He had the toughest weight cut on the team, going down to 106. And I would put my money on Andrew Siniglia as eating the most.
You guys agree with that, or think you want to weigh in here?
Andrew?
Andrew's in the front. No one wants to sit next to him.
Yeah. The freshman by himself. I know I ate a lot, cutting a lot of weight, and I was just so happy, and I'm like, it's a free-for-all now, so.
So you went from 106 to 150, right?
Yeah, not quite, but close.
All right. We're going to take a break and be back with more of the state champion Nazareth wrestling team in just a moment. But right now, your chance to win tonight's trivia, and we'll unveil the question. It does deal with high school wrestling. I think it's a good one, though we have some very knowledgeable people in the Lehigh Valley. So let's see if we get a correct answer to this. Since and including the 2007-2008 season, there have been five repeat District 11 team wrestling champions. We want you to name all five schools that have won multiple District 11 team wrestling titles, and here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months, but if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with sports talk trivia.
All right, in our first feature of the evening, the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs open their season tomorrow after tonight's game got rained out. But our Sports Talk cameras had a chance to catch up to some of their top prospects and get their thoughts on spring training and their goals for 2017.
I enjoy spring training, man, especially learning from the veteran guys like Howie, Michael Saunders, and Daniel Nava was actually down there. And I learned a lot from Chris Coughlin, too, and just picking their brains on how they go about their business every day was I took away from that.
Oh, it was great. Getting to see, you know, how it goes on the other side. And Big League camp was a great experience. I had a lot of fun. A lot of the guys were really nice, and looking forward to hopefully getting back there next year.
It was my first spring training, first year in the roster, so nothing else that I can ask for. It was just a dream come true, being there, being the last guy to be cut. Obviously, you don't want to say it was good, but I feel happy for it. It doesn't matter if I got cut. It was my first year there. I'm only 22 years old, so having that first impression for them was great. So I feel happy for all that I accomplished over there. All they said is they don't want to put my career in a risk, and me just staying in the big leagues, not playing almost every 14 days, so all that matters is for me to get better, get my playing time, get my AB, so if something happens, I'm ready to go and I'm not cold, so, and I really get that. It was the best decision, not for me, only for them too, so I get that.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Special program tonight, this segment, we're joined by the PIAA state champions, Nazareth Blue Eagles wrestling program. Also some a lot of individual honors. We'll talk with them in just a moment. We also have two special achievements. Keith Kroller, first of all, won the Morning Call NCAA basketball bracket of everyone there. So, Keith, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
And we have Alyssa Scheckler over here on camera three, which is Keith's camera. She also won the RCN NCAA basketball pool, had North Carolina beating Gonzaga. I asked her to come out here and take a little bow. She refused. So, Keith, you're good friend.
Obviously, Alyssa and I did not win enough because we're spending a Thursday night with you here.
I thought that was the prize for doing that.
Booby prize.
But she didn't want to get on camera. So what we did, we took your buddy, Mike Kingsley. We had him up on the roof.
My buddy.
To get, yes.
My fellow Deerf alum.
Proud Deerf wrestler.
Oh, brother.
And he was up on the roof to get a picture of Alyssa. We have a picture of Alyssa here so we could pay tribute to her. There she is from Mike Kingsley. Great job by the Deerf Husky again, getting a nice quality picture of Alyssa.
He always comes through.
Or he does something. All right, Dave Kroll, along with Brock Wilson and Travis Stefanik up here. We have more wrestlers we're going to get to in a moment. But Keith, you have one.
I just wanted to ask Dave. Look, I've been the basketball guy at the paper for 30 some years, 35 years.
But I even got really, I mean, we follow along because I do a radio show and I do the show with Chris, and I like to know what's going on. I was really just absolutely riveted by those big battles with Bethlehem Catholic, following it match by match, the last one in Hershey and so forth. Have you been around a long, I don't want to make you feel old, but you've been around a long time. You've had great success at Easton, I believe also at Wilson. Mm-hmm. Have you ever experienced a series of matches against a super talented team and experienced that head-to-head competition that was just captivating, compelling for even the non-wrestling fan?
Yeah.
Have you ever had any experienced anything like that?
No. I can honestly say that it was very, very special. Nothing like that before. And to be just brutally honest, I didn't think we could beat them once. You know, like, so, you know, we lost by, I think, around 20 the first time, and thought maybe we'd get closer. I honestly thought if we were going to beat them ever, everything, you know, everything would just have
to
fall
right
just perfect. And it would probably happen the third time. You know, you kind of get closer every time. Mm-hmm. So when we won when we won in the district finals, we were very happy. Matter of fact, I didn't even think we were that close. I didn't think we could beat them, but my assistant coaches were saying, we can win this. And I'm like, really? I kind of wasn't, because you're just kind of into the individual matches. And when we win it, at first we're happy, then I'm starting to go, oh, nuts. It's going to be way harder to beat them next week. You know, now they're really ready for us. And, of course, it was. But no, to have that, like, 3 weeks in a row, to have, you know, go against, you know, a top 10 team in the country and win two out of those three was, you know. But really, in the whole series, we actually competed against them eight times this year.
Wow.
If you can count all the tournaments we were in, individual tournaments. So the total was, we were 3-5 against them, but three of those were pretty special.
I imagine. Look, you know, you want to beat them; they're a great rival. They, you know, there is that undercurrent. And I'm not going to get into it, but that undercurrent of, you know, private versus public, that kind of thing. But I'm sure you have great respect for the coaching staff and all those kids over there.
Well, their coach Jeff Karam, I coached him in high school, so that is, of course, that closeness there that you have, you know, when you do that. And you know, you kind of, you know, their kids, of course, two of the boys on their team wrestled in our program up through eighth or ninth grade. And so, yeah, there's a, you know, you, and when you're with them, you compete against them so often that you do, you know, it's a thing. But it's a good rivalry. Mm-hmm. Our guys want to win.
It may be the number. I mean, I look at Easton Peaburg football is always going to be something spectacular and draw the most people. But I think it right now, you have to say, it might be the best rivalry in local sports.
Well, this one certainly was. I mean, of course, we had just an exceptional team. And, of course, you know, just we're talking with Andrew Siniglia, getting him, he broke his collarbone, and then getting him back at the end of the year, that kind of, you know, turned some things around for us and gave us more depth and, you know, gave us more flexibility. And, of course, he's an outstanding wrestler. So, yeah, the way it worked out, it's probably not too often yet would you have two, you know, top 10 teams in the country are, you know, trading punches week in and week out.
Yeah. We're going to take a break now, and then I'm going to ask these guys to talk about their individual accomplishments, because I started making a list of everything you guys have accomplished and medals and so forth, and our graphics person would have killed me because I would have had like 30 minutes worth of just graphics. So I'm going to ask the kids to go around in just a little bit. But right now it's time for Growler's Grumblings. This is where Keith sounds off and talks about anything and everything on his sports mind. Keith?
Well, really quickly, a sad departure in the high school basketball world. St. Anthony's Bob Hurley, a legendary coach, and times have changed, and I guess they ran out of funds there. St. Anthony's had made several appearances in the Lehigh Valley, and you know, a lot of people don't respect them because they could bring in people from different venues there, and but Bob Hurley is a great coach, and he always, to my way of thinking, he was a class act, and I'm sad to see that program go. And another thing, I know it's not sports, but man, I used to love Don Rickles. Don Rickles passing away today, yeah. And you know, in an era now where we have to be so politically correct, he was anything but politically correct. But we all laughed, and
I think we lost a great comedian there and somebody who meant a lot to people my age and older. But I used to enjoy his appearances on the Carson show. So I want to get right back to these guys because they deserve the time. State champions.
Yeah, and Don Rickles still was performing recently.
Yeah, I think he made an appearance over here at the Sand. So I love them. He was a good guy.
All right, so we're going to, before we get to our last segment, we have our last feature of the evening. And the Emmaus volleyball team certainly looks to be one of the teams to beat in the Lehigh Valley this spring. Sports Talk cameras were on the scene for a recent win over Allen.
Came off of a great run this weekend at the Bobcat Invitational. We performed really, really well. We need to take what we did on Saturday and bring that forth for the rest of the season. We did have a key injury on the weekend to Matt Swanson, our one middle, starting middle. So that's certainly something we're going to have to start working around, and that probably had a little bit of impact today.
Today was good. We didn't have a lot of energy, but we picked it up for the third set. We need to work on that for the next couple games that we play.
We need to work on our hits. Our passing at times was a little off. Cam played really well. Brandon played really well. I think overall, we need to work on our energy and then to get to where we want to be.
We'll work on that as the season progresses, and hopefully we'll be ready for the districts.
If everything goes according to plan, in June we should be playing or competing for a state championship.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our final segment with Dave Kroll and the state champions, Nazareth Blue Eagles wrestling program, after a phenomenal season. I want to get over to our auxiliary set here and ask some of these wrestlers about their favorite moments, their personal highlights this year. We're going to start with Cade here up front. And we moved over to Andrew to keep him company. We appreciate that, Cade. But go ahead.
So probably my personal favorite would be winning districts and regionals. Mm-hmm. Joining my brother and a lot of good group of friends. So, yeah, and also like the team favorite would be being state champions. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Andrew, what was your favorite individual highlight, and what was it like, especially coming back off that collarbone injury, to come back and have as much success as you did?
Yeah, it was probably my favorite part of the season, coming back from an injury and being able to help out my team in the state finals. I know we had a previous 106-pounder there, but with me in the lineup, it just made it a little more secure and just to be able to help win a state title. Because it's been 10 years since we've done it, and it was a pretty spectacular thing.
Yeah. And maybe your assistant coaches want to get in here, because you were giving these guys a lot of credit during the commercial break, too. And
they definitely should be in there.
Yeah. Dave was giving you guys all sorts of credit as far as figuring out the matchups and weight classes and the points in advance, so... What's that like, putting everything like that together?
Hot potatoes.
It's very stressful, you know, because so many different things can happen. Whether you win the toss or you don't win the toss, they can do a lot of different things with their lineup. We can do a lot of different things with our lineup. You try not to be biased for your guys, because we think all 14 of our guys can win.
Yeah.
So, but when you're game planning, you know, you got to get to 7 wins somehow, and we have confidence in all of our guys, but. Coach Adam Clemo and I spent a lot of time going through kind of every different scenario and talking about what everything can happen. And then once the match starts, it goes out the window anyway. all our plans, you know, things happen that you never expect. So it's fun to do, and then it's fun to see these guys go out there. But they deserve all the credit, because no matter what we do, they have to go out and wrestle hard, and it was amazing this year.
It's great in terms of strategy to have that, but I imagine it's maddening for you guys to try to figure that out. Is that something you like, having that ability to jump, or do you like the other way of that being, all right, everyone comes out, you flip a coin, who goes first, that's your lineup, boom, that's your lineup, and everyone sticks to it no matter what. Which do you guys prefer?
Well, I know Coach Kroll would like to eliminate the coin flip, but I might be out of the job, so I hope that we keep the coin flip.
Keep it in.
But it's the only sport where a coin flip can really have a huge impact on the match, so I understand why that taking that out would be, you know, important.
I personally like it because I don't do any of it. I just show up. They have it all worked out, and that's a big piece. Yeah. In a big match, it is huge. And I don't do a bit of it. They don't even ask me my opinion. They just get it all figured out, and I just say, okay, let's go.
I wanted to ask either the assistant coaches or some of the athletes. I mean, this guy's a legend. I mean,
Coach of the Year?
Multiple coaches of the year. I mean, he's
Hall of Famer, too.
If we did a Mount Rushmore of Lehigh Valley wrestling, he would be Abe Lincoln for sure. Just give me some thoughts of what this man represents and what he's done for this program and all
of Lehigh Valley Wrestling, because, again, I don't know that there's too many people who have had the success that Mr. Kroll's had. So you got the microphone. You might as well
Go right ahead. You know, coaching with Coach Kroll, it's like coaching with Vince Lombardi or, you know, Bear Bryant, one of these amazing guys. And it's not just the coaching that makes him special. It is how much he cares about our kids and our staff. And he coaches us as coaches. We're better coaches because we get to work with Coach Kroll. And he teaches us about life, not just the kids, but the coaches, about life and how to be a good person, how to do the right thing and make good decisions and have be reliable to other people in your life. So it's, I grow every year as a person just coaching with Coach Kroll.
Yeah, absolutely. Every day I learn something new, and even I apply it. I learn just as much as the kids do, how to just communicate with kids these age and how to get through with them. He's the best at that for sure. One thing stands out before we wrestled Beck after we got beat. He said before, somebody's going to have to be a hero today to win this. And then in the state finals, we had a couple of those kind of things happen, and it's almost like he saw it coming ahead of time. That's what makes him really special.
Anyone else? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got to be an athlete for Coach Kroll not too long ago, and I loved him as a coach. He's probably my favorite coach I ever had, and you know, you couldn't really think that you could think like more highly of a person. And then I got to come back from college and be a coach with him. And, you know, I loved him even more after I got to coach with him and got to learn so much. I couldn't imagine having a better coaching experience as my first year being with this group of guys and being with Coach Kroll and the guys that coached me when I was in high school. So, you know, I just learned so much, and there's just a lot that I can take away as a coach and just as a person.
I just want to get your sense of what wrestling means in that town. I mean, I think there's, you know, some parts of this Lehigh Valley, it's all wrestling. I mean, and Nazareth is certainly a wrestling town. They've had basketball success, girls and boys. But you had, your gym is, I believe, named after one of the great, another great wrestling icon, another guy that's on that Mount Rushmore, Mr. Ray Nunnemaker. Just your thoughts on what wrestling means in that community and what your Blue Eagle wrestling tradition means.
There really is not anything like Nazareth wrestling as high school that you can compare it to. I've been all over the country, wrestled everywhere, talked to thousands of wrestling fans and people, and it's just, it means something to almost everyone in town. It's really important to people. People know who you are. I've been gone for 5 years. I come back home and I go to the gas station and people remember when I was a wrestler at Nazareth. And it's just really deep roots of wrestling tradition. And there's not many places where there's an athletic program that you can compare it to.
And it's got to be exciting for you and your wrestlers to have that kind of support. I know you've been in other schools, but Ray Rommel is now, a second or third year AD. Mm-hmm. I know Kim in the athletic office is terrific. Yeah. And you need that. It's got to be a team effort. It's got to be community. It's got to be parents. It's got to be administration right down the line. And that makes it all. I mean, that's what the state champion is built on, all those different components coming together, right?
Oh, there's no question about it. It's athletics is just kind of the nature of athletics today. It's a big production. It is. There's a lot of people that are involved. Our booster club is enormous. That's a huge thing. You know, we couldn't progress and have the kids get better if we don't have the ability to go to the Beast of the East and went to the Iron Man and we go to the Bethlehem Holiday, and those things all cost money, and our booster club raises it and gives these guys the opportunity to, you know, try to get them so they keep getting better and they're best at the end of the year.
Speaking of their best, these guys are pretty smart too. Princeton and Harvard, you guys are going to you got to be excited about going to those two schools.
We're going to the one and two best colleges in the country and in the world.
Harvard being number one.
No. U.S. News and World Report has Princeton number one. But it's all right.
Number one in 11 out of 14 topics.
But yeah, it gives us a great line for success in the future. No success is guaranteed, but going to those schools, it puts you on a right path. I wouldn't have been able to do without wrestling. The whole school together. Shout out Mr. Ramella, but he's one of the best. He's ADs in this valley. He knows how important wrestling is to the school. Also shout out Miss Kim Stassa. She provides us candy when we're cutting weight. So she
does other things too.
Oh yeah, but that's the most important.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just have a great environment to be successful.
When you come back to Nazareth, I mean, everybody was out there. Was it just like a hero's welcome when you got back into town, Travis? I mean,
it was. It means so much to everyone. Everyone in town is just rooting for you. Everyone, there's no of the. Sometimes people may be jealous of the success people have, but that doesn't happen in Nazareth. Everyone's happy for the success and just joyful for just the great season we all had all together.
We only have 30 seconds left, but Brock, was there something you wanted to add there too?
I thought it's pretty cool that we're going to be seeing each other still on a consistent basis just because our schools are in the same conference and going to be
bragging rights back and forth.
Of course.
Brock, I got to give you the edge, though. I've been to Harvard. I've been to Princeton. Boston beats New Jersey. Just a little bit.
Princeton has a better press box for football. Yeah. All right. Dave, thanks so much. Congratulations on all the honors this year, and thanks for we had to reschedule you a couple times. So we're so glad you could make it here and bring your team in here as well.
This is a class guy, and these are class kids. I just like the fact that they're wearing ties. You know, I think that shows a lot of respect and class, and I give you a lot of credit, Coach. And you are a champion in more ways than one.
I'm just very, very blessed to be coaching where I am and to have the kids that wrestle for me. You know, it's just a tremendous blessing.
All right. Our thanks for being here. Coming up next, we have a pre-recorded interview from yesterday that we taped. Nationals beat reporter Mark Zuckerman. That's straight ahead. Welcome back to Sports Talk. We're joined by a very special guest who does a great job covering the Washington Nationals all year long. Masson's Mark Zuckerman is joining us. Mark, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to Sports Talk this evening.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We really appreciate it. You do a great job covering the Nats, both for Masson and online. We encourage people to follow you on Twitter at Mark Zuckerman to get some great insights. Opening day, of course, was this week, a special time of year, especially for someone as yourself that's been involved in baseball for some time. And I imagine in the Washington area, the last couple opening days have been a little extra special given the high expectations for this year. So your thoughts on opening day for yourself and for the Nationals, which was a great win for the Nats and also for the fans of the Washington area.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to see over the years how this has built up. You know, you go back to obviously the first year at RFK Stadium was a huge deal because it was the return of baseball after 33 years. But then the team went through some down years. And so there was times, I remember them well, when they would host the Phillies on opening day and you'd have busloads of people coming down from Philadelphia and it almost felt like a road game even though they were at home. But over the last several years, as the team has gotten better, as they've become regular playoff contenders, I think it's turned into more of an event around here and a time for local fans to really celebrate the beginning of the season and have all that optimism and hope that you want to have on opening day. And as far as the game on Monday, the team did a pretty good job of boosting up that optimism because pretty much everything you'd want to see happen, it did. Steven Strasburg pitched well. Bryce Harper homered again on opening day. One of the new guys, Adam Lind, homered to give them the lead. And then the back of the bullpen, which I think for a lot of people has been their biggest question or reason for concern about this team, was lights out also. And Blake Treinen, the new closer, was 1-2-3 in the ninth. And so, look, we all overanalyze opening day because it's the only game we have to work with for 48 hours. But I think it would be hard not, if you're a Nats fan, it would be hard not to get excited about what you saw in the first game of the season.
You mentioned the bullpen. Blake Treinen, of course, won the closer's role. Dusty Baker identified him as the closer to start the year. Sean Kelly, of course, and Kota Glover, very good candidates as well. Could you talk a little bit about the bullpen heading into the season? It seems in years past there was always a question somewhere in the bullpen, but this year they seem really loaded front to back. And, of course, Joe Blanton, a late off-season addition, was thrown into the mix, a guy who rejuvenated his career with the Dodgers a couple years ago as a multi-innings reliever. reliever. The bullpen really looks like one of the strengths of this year's team.
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I think a lot of people on the outside have looked at this as a weakness for the team because they went into the offseason and wound up going into spring training without an established closer. After cycling through guys over the last few years, after the Jonathan Papelbon experiment didn't work out, and then after Mark Melancon, who was so great for them, wound up signing with San Francisco instead, I think it left a lot of people concerned. Mm-hmm. What I've been trying to say, and I think what the people with the organization have felt all along, is that this is actually a really talented and deep bullpen. This was the second-best bullpen in baseball by ERA last year. And while no, they didn't have that guy who has proven himself in the ninth inning, they had three or four guys who could take a claim to it, and probably a good five guys that you could say these are real legitimate late-inning, back-of-the-game established pitchers. And so they had their options. They decided to go with Blake Treinen because they think that his power sinker really fits that role. They looked at what Zach Britton has done in Baltimore and see kind of a similar style of pitcher there. But they, I think beyond the closer, I think they feel like if they can get you into the sixth or seventh inning with a lead between Treinen, Kelly, Blanton, Coda Glover, who may become the closer someday, Sammy Solis, the lefty who was really good on opening day in a setup role. Eni Romero is a guy most people have not heard of, a big left-hander who throws 99 miles an hour and blew him away this spring to make the team. That's a lot of depth, and they feel like if they can take a lead into the late innings, they're going to lock stuff down. It's going to be really hard for opponents to come back against them. And so I actually do agree. I think this is going to be one of their strengths this season, provided that Treinen can handle the pressure of being the closer. And based on what we saw in Game 1, I think he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, going through the heart of the Marlins order for opening day. Mark, what's your thoughts overall on the offseason moves and the way that the Nationals apparently look to move forward and keep that momentum going after a successful 2016? Do you think they added enough pieces with Adam Eaton shoring up the outfield and the top of the order and bringing in Matt Wieters behind the plate? Did they do enough in the offseason? And what grade would you give the Nats front office this offseason?
Well, you know, it's funny because when you look at their recent history after they've won a title or won a division title and then failed in the playoffs, you've seen Mike Rizzo go out and make some kind of really bold move that almost kind of bolsters what was already a strength. Think about the Max Scherzer signing, for example. They didn't need another starter. They already had one of the best rotations in baseball, and then they went out and spent $210 million on another ace. And so some people said, well, wait a minute. Maybe they were expecting something again like that this winter, and instead I think they were more calculated moves. I think they looked at this and said, you know what, this was a 95-win team last year, despite the fact that, you know, Bryce Harper had a rough year, Ryan Zimmerman had a bad year, the instability of closer. So they felt like, let's keep what we have here and then try to fill in the holes that we think we have. And Adam Eaton was a big part of that. Now, they gave up a lot for him. There was a lot of negative reaction that they would give up two top prospects in Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez for a guy who's not considered a real star player. But I think Eaton is going to fit in with this team really well because I think the things he does well are the things they've needed more of. And you saw it on opening day. Yeah. Works in at bat really well. He was on base three different times. He runs well. You know, delivers a hit when you need it, but can also be that table setter and steal a base if you need it. By getting him and putting him in center field, it allowed them to move Trey Turner to shortstop, which is his natural position. So I really think this guy's going to be good for them, if not that headlining star-level player. And then I think the other moves they made were very calculated. Again, they bided their time. They waited. They got Joe Blanton on a fairly affordable deal after spring training had started. They got Adam Lind on the eve of spring training. And while Matt Wieters was not necessarily on their radar all winter, it wasn't particularly a guy they wanted to go after because they felt like he was going to get a bigger contract than they felt he was worth. Mm-hmm. By the time they got to, late February, he was still available, and they could get him essentially for 1 year and $10.5 million. I think Rizzo and the organization looked at that and said, you know what? This guy will make our team better. He's better than what we already have, and it's a very affordable price, so go ahead and do it. So I think it was actually a smart offseason in the end for them, that the money they spent was calculated, and they didn't let the market force the issue on them. They waited it out, and I think wound up getting some pretty good deals in the end.
You mentioned Trey Turner. We had him on our show last year. Saw quite a bit of him at AAA. Boy, you really have to like him. Talking with him before and after games, seeing what he does out on the field. He's a guy that seems to really get it, and I imagine he's been fitting in quite well with his new role at the major league level. What are your expectations for Trey Turner for this year and beyond?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, as a player, he's just been everything they could have asked for and more. And really, the more is the story here, because I think most people viewed him as a classic leadoff hitter with great speed who's going to put the bat on the ball. And, you know, that's a really valuable thing to have. And then he came up last year and you realize, oh, wow, he's got power too. 12 or 13 home runs, I think, in about half a season that he was up in the big leagues. So he's got that weapon. And I think the best description of him, I think it was Ryan Zimmerman who said this last year about him, is a lot of times you just think of these classic leadoff hitters as they're just really fast guys who happen to play baseball. And in this case, Trey Turner is a really good baseball player who also happens to be incredibly fast, maybe the fastest guy in the league. He's got all the skills, and that's going to make him a really dangerous weapon for them. And then, like you were saying, on top of it all, he's got the personality and I think the understanding of knowing what his place is in this game and getting the fact that he is going to be a big-name guy. He joked about early in spring training, he went out to dinner with Bryce Harper, and people came flocking to Bryce, and nobody even realized who Trey was sitting there next to him.
Yeah,
that won't be the case for much longer. I think people are going to learn who he is, and I think he's okay with that idea. I think he gets how to deal with the attention and the expectations, and being one of, you know, they have many of them on this team now because they have a lot of stars, but being one of the faces of this franchise for a long time.
Yeah, Nat fans are really going to fall in love with Trey Turner and his baseball IQ and the way he plays the game. Our special guest this segment is Masson's Mark Zuckerman. A couple more questions for you. We invite people to follow you online as well. You tweeted out a great story over the weekend with some injury news on the Nationals. Among them, Jason Worth and Anthony Rendon were on that tweet with some injury concerns. I know Rendon didn't play opening day. Worth played, but he didn't have some real pretty looking at bats. Struck out three times and took some weird looking swings, too. What's the health status of those two guys and any other injury news early in the season for the Nats?
Well, Rendon, this was a weird one. He fouled a ball off his leg a week ago at spring training, and at the time, nobody thought it was much anything. He sat out a couple of days, but he was still sitting out by Monday and wasn't able to play. So I think everything's going to be fine there. I think they were just being overly cautious, especially knowing that there was an off day after the opener and that everything should be fine. But as always, until you see him on the field, you never know for sure. You know, Worth's thing was fine. I don't think there was any injury issue anymore by the time we got to opening day. But you're right, he had some ugly swings. But it's funny, I actually, late in spring training, I and a couple people were talking to both him and Ryan Zimmerman in a dugout one day. I'm just talking about spring training in general and then what it's like to move on to the regular season. And Worth was actually joking about how it doesn't matter how good you feel at the plate at the end of spring. It always happens. You get to the big stadium and the lights and the three decks and everything else, and there's an adjustment period. And he even mimicked the kind of swing that he feels like he always takes when he first gets into the batter's box in a big league park. Mm-hmm. And it was this really awkward wing that looked exactly like what we saw on Monday's game, and I couldn't help but laugh at how prescient he was to know that was going to happen. So I wouldn't write him off quite yet. I'd give him some opportunities to get some at-bats here in the first week of the season, and I think he should be fine. But he's 37 going on 38. This is the last year of his contract. He knows it's a big year. He also knows, and the team knows, that the history shows that guys at that age aren't as productive as they used to be. But he takes good care of his body. He still, in my opinion, can put together a good quality at bat with about just as good as anybody out there, and that's why they like him so much. They have enough other talent in the lineup, enough with their pop, that he doesn't have to be the one to carry the load for them. But if he can come through in some big spots for them, like I said, deliver those key at bats, keep getting on base at a good rate, and keep having the leadership, you know, really he's been as responsible as anybody for the turn of this franchise from being a last-place team into a real contender, because he helped change the attitude, I think, within the clubhouse. If he can keep being that guy, I think they'll be more than happy with what he provides for them this year.
Mark, when we talked yesterday, you shared a very interesting idea about how the Nationals proceed the first few weeks of April. As you well know, it's always tricky, especially when the Nats have a solid front four in their starting rotation. The fifth guy often gets bumped because of the off days. You don't want to skip over a Strasburg or a Scherzer at the risk of your number five guy. So what do you think the plan is? Could you share your idea of what the Nats might do and have the Nats actually said anything as far as what they'll do for the next few weeks for the number five spot in the rotation?
No, they've been a little bit coy about this. As they're, you know, certainly is their right to do if they don't want other teams to know what their plan is. But you can kind of piece it together based on how they made some moves here at the end of the spring. They only carried four starting pitchers on the opening day roster. Obviously, they're going to need a fifth starter, but they don't need it until this weekend in Philadelphia. Joe Ross was and is their number five starter, but they decided to actually option him to AAA to open the year. And because of that, there's actually a rule that says, your option to the minors, you have to stay there for 10 days. Mm-hmm. You can't be called back up unless somebody else gets injured and you're replacing them. So barring an injury, Joe Ross actually isn't going to be eligible to come back yet this weekend. And that's why I actually think the number five starter, at least for one turn, is going to be Jeremy Guthrie, the old veteran who wasn't even in the big leagues last year, but he had a great spring for them. He was competing ostensibly to be the long man out of the bullpen. They decided to not put him on the opening day roster, but he's still with the organization, still working out. And I would not be surprised if they actually call him up to start in Philadelphia this weekend, and then after that decide whether they want to keep him as a long man in the bullpen, in which case they'd have to lose one of their bench players. But either way, Joe Ross is going to be at Syracuse, probably make two or even three starts until that number five starter spot comes up again. Mm-hmm. And at that point, come April 22nd, I think it is, something like that, then I think we will see Joe Ross, and he'll be off and running for the rest of the season as long as he stays healthy. So they're playing with the roster here early on, but the off days allow you the ability to do that. The fact that some of these players have minor league options means you can send them up and down. And so I think they're taking advantage, essentially, of the rules that allow them to adjust their roster and realizing, hey, we don't play every 5 days or 5 days in a row that often in April, so why carry a fifth starter when we can carry someone else who might actually help our team on a daily basis?
Mark, before we let you go, I'd like to pin you down and get some predictions. Obviously, the expectations are raised for the Nationals this year, so what do you think as far as a division and postseason honors, and also Bryce Harper? There's a lot of talk about his impending free agency down the road. Do you think the Nationals will try to lock him up early? Will Scott Boras go along with that, or what might happen if he does, in fact, hit the free agent market?
Well, let's start with Harper, because this is probably the question on so many people's minds around D.C. and around baseball,
yeah.
And it has been for a while. And all I can say is the Nats would love to engage in some talks. It doesn't seem like much of anything has been made progress so far at this point, because if you're Bryce Harper, you think about it, you had an MVP season in 15. You want to talk numbers then, but then you had the down year last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't want to try to sign a contract at that point because your value has just gone down. You've got 2 years to go until free agency. Most of the time you get that close, you want to test the waters and see what you can get. So I think it will come to that. Now, whether he stays or whether he goes, I've always believed that this is less about money and more about where does he want to spend the bulk of his career. He appreciates the idea of being a guy who spends his whole career with one team. He knows very few guys do that anymore. And so I think there is some appeal there. But I think he also is such a student of the game and understands the history of who the greatest players are, and most of them have played for the really iconic franchises. And if he does go somewhere else, I really believe it's going to be a New York or a Boston or Chicago or L.A., something like that. I don't think he's just going to take a ton of money to go play in Seattle, all due respect to the Mariners and the good people of Seattle. So this is going to play out over the next 2 years, and I think the Nationals' success or lack of success is going to have as much a role to do with all this as anything else. If he feels like this is a franchise that can become one of those iconic ones, then maybe he does stay here for the long haul. If not, then maybe he does look to go to play in the Bronx or Fenway Park or Wrigley Field or wherever else might be available to him. So I would tell Nats fans, enjoy these 2 years. You're going to get him in his prime, and then, you know, see what happens. You never know what may happen.
Mm-hmm.
As far as this year's team goes, Look, I think they are better than last year's team that won 95 games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are injuries and things that can happen that can derail that, but I sense there is a lot of belief in that clubhouse of some unfinished business. They have not won a playoff series yet. They know that. They want to take that next step. The Mets are good. They're going to challenge them. I think it is going to be a good race throughout. I do think the Mets have more injury concerns than the Nationals, and so that's why I lean to the Nats. I've got them winning 97 games, winning the division. And then I've got them winning a playoff series, one, and then they're going to have to face the Cubs in the NLCS, and that's going to be a tough challenge.
Yeah.
So I've got them losing in that round. But they are good enough to win a World Series. I don't think there's any question. It's just a matter of can they get through the season, and then can you win a five-game and then a seven-game series when it really matters in October? It's a hard thing to do, and these guys want to get over that hump desperately. Their fans desperately want them to get over that hump because they've been waiting a long time in this town for anybody to win, and they would love for one of the teams, if not certainly the Nationals, to be the one that finally does it.
Yeah, they're certainly off to a great start, especially after that opening day performance. Mark, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the Phillies series coming up, and have a great 2017 season.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Mark Zuckerman, our special guest from Masson. Make sure you check him out on TV and online, and also follow him at Twitter at Mark Zuckerman with some great insights on baseball. That'll do it for tonight's program. We'll be back next week with another live edition of Sports Talk. Until then, I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.